Support for this podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Turn shipping to your advantage with USPS Ground Advantage service. Learn how to gain a competitive edge at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Almost 2 years ago, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, deciding that access to abortion is not protected in the United States Constitution. A lot has happened since then. Nationwide, citizens are arguing at the courts, legislatures, and ballot boxes over whether abortion should be banned, and if so, under what circumstances. It's already a big issue in the 2024 election. Republican candidate Donald Trump shared his latest take on abortion in a video message last week.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
But one of you disagrees.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I'm calling from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And with respect to abortion and Donald Trump flip-flopping all over the place, let him say it's up to the states to decide. What I say and what all women should say, no, it's up to the woman to decide what is going to happen to her life.
In this week's installment of our weekly politics series, If You Can Keep It, we're discussing abortion and politics and the impact it could play on the upcoming election. I'm Jen White with 1A's Todd Zwillick in studio, and you're listening to the 1A podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We've got a lot to get into, so stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon.
Let's get into the conversation. Joining Todd and I is Caroline Kitchener. She's national politics reporter at The Washington Post covering abortion. It's great to have you back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Last week, big news came out of Arizona, where the state Supreme Court voted to uphold an 1864 law that bans abortions and punishes doctors who provide them. Caroline, remind us of the details of what happened.
Yeah, so Jen, this type of law is something that we had seen, you know, right when Roe was overturned. There were a handful of states that still had these old pre-Roe laws on the books. You had Texas, Wisconsin, Arizona, and nobody really knew what was going to happen with these laws because it's sort of such a strange concept, like taking these laws basically back from the dead. But they did take effect because you have abortion providers that are really concerned and, you know, obviously don't want to break the law. So you did have them come back, and you had the Arizona one come back temporarily until it was blocked by a court. And it has been blocked, you know, for quite a long time now. And, you know, now in the next couple of weeks, we're expecting it to take effect again and for all abortions in Arizona to stop.
What reaction did politicians and the public have to this decision?
I mean, there was uproar. I mean, I think it was for Trump, the timing was not ideal because he had literally just the day before come out and said, we should leave this up to the states. And then the day after, you have a state Supreme Court coming out and reviving this 1864 law. And I think, you know, the public, you know, points to, okay, well, this is what leaving it to the states looks like. So I think you saw a lot of scrambling, a lot of, you know, I don't know what to do. I think a lot lot of people really weren't prepared for that decision and really weren't sure, you know, what comes next.
Well, we heard from Donald Trump at the top of the show stating the facts. This will be left to the states now. On Wednesday, he said he would not sign a national abortion ban. That followed his video statement on Monday declaring, as we just heard, that abortions will be left up to the states. He also said that the Arizona Supreme Court, in this case, went too far with his ruling. But Caroline, in the past, Donald Trump has said that women should be punished for having abortions. He's also said basically nothing in other states about whether bans should go away or be upheld. What's the political calculus, if there is one, behind the range of Trump statements here?
Well, I think it's really hard to say. I mean, I know from talking with sources on the anti-abortion side that he has been under a lot of pressure to come out with some kind of statement on a national ban and you know, say that he supports that, and obviously he didn't. I thought kind of the most interesting statement that he said in the wake of this ruling was, don't worry. Like we're going to take care of this. Like this law isn't going to happen. Something along those lines. He said, basically, don't worry. In Arizona, and then you also had a similar ruling in Florida in recent weeks. He said, don't worry, we're going to take care of it. So, now I'm actually in Phoenix right now, and I'm looking to a potential repeal. I mean, I think there are a lot of conversations going on within the Republican Party across the country, but, in the Arizona State House, are we going to try to repeal this thing? They're certainly going to be under pressure to.
Well, Todd, I think it's worth talking about the fact that this is not just about what the former president says on the campaign trail. He was president at what point? What was his position on abortion when he was in office?
Donald Trump's main impact was appointing three Supreme Court justices who then got in place to overturn Roe v. Wade. That was the promise of his presidency. It was the nature of his alliance with Mitch McConnell. It was his promise to the evangelical right and to most Republican voters to appoint Supreme Court justices and other federal justices in the Fifth Circuit and elsewhere that would overturn Roe. And in that case, promise kept. Donald Trump delivered. Now, there were a whole other series of smaller abortion footballs that get kicked around when Republican and Democratic candidates trade the White House, things in regulation, Mexico City policy, where Donald Trump was a fairly reliable Republican in that regard and pleased the right. But I think the Supreme Court and the judiciary is the main place to look here. The Dobbs decision that overturned Roe, Donald Trump rightly takes credit for that.
Caroline, I want to turn to some of your reporting. You've been covering the rise of so-called self-managed abortions, especially in states with bans. First, what is a self-managed abortion?
So self-managed abortion is an abortion that takes place outside of the medical system. And, far and away, the vast majority of self-managed abortions that we are seeing now are with pills. So, you are seeing now just thousands and thousands of women every month in states with bans ordering pills online or getting them through various volunteer-led networks that are springing up and taking them alone, without any kind of official guidance from a medical professional.
Now, for your reporting, you spoke to Brianna, a 34-year-old in Alabama where abortion is banned. Because of a lack of care locally and long shipment times, she took abortion pills at least 5 weeks after the FDA's recommended 10-week limit. What happened next?
It was an extremely difficult situation. And I do want to say that, the vast majority of these cases happen, people take pills within the 10-week limit or soon after, and you don't have this happen, this situation. But because Brianna was so far along, at least 15 or 16 weeks into her pregnancy, she, passed a fetus that was much larger than she was expecting and struggled to pass her umbilical cord and placenta. So she is, sitting there in the bathroom, completely terrified, knows that she should go to the emergency room, but feels absolutely certain that if she does, she will be prosecuted. She's terrified of that. And so she finds a, hotline that, came with the instructions for her pills that she can call. She gets on the phone with this hotline. There's a volunteer doctor on the phone. She has no idea who this person's name is or anything about them, but they walk her through this process, and they tell her to take a few more pills and, you know, breathe deeply, but it is, and she's okay, but it was an absolutely terrifying experience.
Let's head to a quick break here. Coming up, we talked to Matt Gress in Phoenix. Last week, he was the only Republican in the Arizona House who pushed for a vote to repeal the 1864 law banning abortion. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Squarespace. Measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, and more. Use code NPR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have very important people on our show and then ask them about very unimportant things. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We are also reliably informed that among your enthusiasms, in addition to macroeconomic policy, is mobile games.
There is some truth in that.
There's some truth in that.
Join us for the NPR podcast that considers all the other things. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
On NPR's Throughline.
We cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Let's turn now to Arizona. Last week, the state Supreme Court voted to uphold an 1864 law criminalizing almost all abortions. On Wednesday in Arizona's state house, Republican Representative Matt Gress from Phoenix joined Democrats in quickly trying to repeal the 19th century ban. But the GOP majority voted to adjourn instead, delaying any debate to this week. Democrats didn't like that.
I move that we recess to the sound of the bell immediately.
You've heard the secondary motion. I heard a second. All in favor of that motion, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, vote no. Ayes have it. So ordered.
Shame on you! Shame on you!
Here's Arizona's Speaker of the House, Republican Ben Thoma.
This law, should it pass, will not become effective any sooner if we pass it today or if we pass it at some point, but before the end of the session.
That was Arizona Speaker of the House, Republican Ben Thoma. Earlier this morning, we spoke to Thoma's GOP colleague, Representative Gress. We first asked Representative Gress why he pushed to repeal the 1864 abortion ban.
You know, when the Supreme Court ruled on Tuesday upholding that territorial ban, it was very clear to me and to most Arizonans that that law does not reflect the values of Arizonans. It doesn't protect Arizona women, and I think it actually undermines defending new life. So I think we need to move with all deliberate speed to get this law repealed, which would then allow for the 15-week law that was previously in effect to go back into place, which I think is a reasonable middle ground.
You say you think it undermines defending new life. Can you clarify that?
Sure. I think that when we look at the territorial ban and allowing for only one exception in the case of the life of the mother, I think it's going to result in more dangerous situations for women to be in. It could result in undermining women's health care. It could result in women needing to travel to other states. I don't think that's in the best interest for women or families, and I think it's counterproductive.
Well, Representative, you supported state law enacted in 2022 that banned abortion after 15 weeks. Is that where the line is for you on when abortion should be legal, when it shouldn't be legal? Is 15 weeks where you're at?
So I want to be clear. I was not in the legislature when the 2022 law was passed. I support a 15-week time frame with reasonable exceptions. So that's where I I am, and I think that's where the vast majority of Americans are, that there needs to be some reasonable time frame with reasonable exceptions.
Representative Roe v. Wade protected the right to an abortion up until fetal viability. That's after about 23 weeks, according to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Where do you stand on the line for when abortion should be legal and when it should not?
Well, as I understand it, in talking to experts, that is certainly past the point of fetal pain. And, you know, it becomes a bit more, in my view, more serious for both the woman and the fetus. So I think that's the middle ground. In many European countries, it's 12 weeks, 12 to 14 weeks. So I think there is a larger consensus out there, and 12 to 15 weeks seems to be where many countries and many people are falling. Going too far to 22 or 24 weeks really, I think, creates some pretty big challenges from a policy perspective and certainly from a humanitarian perspective.
So, Representative Gress, let's talk about politics a little bit, because abortion is huge on the national stage. Of course, that's why we landed in Arizona with this repeal. An October New York Times poll suggested that 59% of Arizona's registered voters think abortion should be mostly or always legal. You're running for re-election in what I understand is a swing district there in Phoenix in the state legislature right now. I have to say that after Republicans fought so hard to repeal Roe v. Wade and get the Dobbs decision, and many conservative Arizona legislature members fought so hard to make sure that the abortion ban went into effect in your state, it does give the appearance of a politician who understands that their political future is in jeopardy now that abortion may be effectively banned in your state. How are you navigating that?
Well, I ran for office in 2022 campaigning against the territorial ban. So I think that's pretty clear. And I've been very consistent that that abortion should be legal with a reasonable time frame and reasonable exceptions. So that has been a consistent point. But I'm also proudly pro-life, and I've supported policies that respect women and protect new life. And I can also say that it's not mutually exclusive to hold those beliefs and also believe that women should have the decision and the freedom in this area.
But they had it before under Roe v. Wade, right?
Well, with respect to Roe v. Wade, I was very pleased with the decision, with the Dobbs decision, because I do think that this issue should be determined by our democracy and in our states, and you have a variety of opinions on this issue. So allowing 9 unelected judges in 1973 to take this issue away from the American discourse, I think really has created the moment that we're in right now. Because I think in our democracy, we have to have these honest dialogues about what's appropriate. And the Roe v. Wade decision short-circuited. So I was pleased that the decision came back to the states. And as a state legislator, I think that the appropriate policy that needs to be in place is not the territorial law, a law from the 19th century. It is a law that respects women, protects new life, and reflects the will of people living in the 2020s.
But Representative, what would you say to someone who says this decision shouldn't be in the hands of lawmakers at all? It shouldn't be in the hands of the Supreme Court, unelected judges, people who are not medically trained. This is a decision that should rest purely in the hands of the patient and their medical provider.
Well, I would say that the position I have and that I think most Arizonans have is that it is going to be in the hands of a woman and her medical provider and her family and her clergy. It's one of the most difficult decisions.
But according to you, that decision should be up to them up until 15 weeks.
Well, according to many people.
But I'm just asking purely for your position, up until 15
yes.
weeks, that decision is in the hands of that patient and their provider.
Correct. as is the Supreme Court decision, the Roe v. Wade decision, also had, with the Planned Parenthood v. Casey decision in 1992, also had the point of viability. So the Supreme Court has recognized that the society as a whole has an interest in protecting the vulnerable and, you know, unborn life. And that hasn't really changed in this whole discourse. It is a balancing that we have to do here in the legislature, again, to respect women and protect new life. It's a difficult conversation, no doubt about it. But I, unfortunately, I think the extremes on both sides have wanted to paint this as a black or white, either or issue. And that's just not where most people are.
Representative, on politics, you know, you look around the country, every time this abortion question has come up in Kansas, in Michigan, recently in Alabama, in upstate New York, voters, many Republicans, certainly independents, have come out and voted in favor of abortion rights. It's just happened time after time after time. Now it's dropped on your doorstep in Arizona. What are conversations like among your colleagues? What are conversations like among Republicans behind the scenes about the political impact of the Dobbs decision and your 1864 law that's in front of the legislature right now? What are Republicans saying to each other about the danger they're in here?
You know, many Republicans, and, you know, they wanted to take a week off. I voted against adjournment. They wanted to consider the ramifications of the ruling and what are the legislative remedies. Some believe that the territorial law is the appropriate law of the land. I wholeheartedly disagree. Some of my colleagues aren't running for re-election again either. So, you know, they feel pretty confident in their view. But I think our caucus is somewhat all over the map on this topic because abortion is such a complex issue and you really can't capture everything, you know, in one person and in one, I guess, belief or core belief. I mean, there are just too many facets to the abortion issue and too many situations. So, you know, I've made it clear to my caucus that we need to repeal the territorial law. It is not where most Arizonans are. And
have you told them that if they don't repeal the territorial law, that they're in trouble in the election?
Well, I have shared that Arizonans do not want the territorial law. And I think we've seen polling that's been shared with members that shows that voters are less likely to vote for candidates who support the territorial ban. Now, for me, I don't agree with the policy. I think it's unworkable. It doesn't respect women, and it's not aligned with the values of Arizonans. So that's why I've been able to easily come to this conclusion that we need to repeal the territorial ban. And I'm continuing to have conversations with my colleagues. And some have come up to me and said, look, I'm pro-life. I fundamentally believe in life. And at the same time, constituents reach out to me and say, you're voting for us too. And you have to consider everyone else. I think it was in the Declaration of Independence that you can't govern without the consent of the governed. And I think that that principle is so true in this situation. We cannot ignore the will of our electorate.
We have to leave it there. That's Republican Matt Grass. He's an Arizona state representative speaking to us from Phoenix. Representative, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And a point of clarification, the representative referenced fetal pain prior to viability. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists say that the science conclusively establishes that a human fetus does not have the capacity to experience pain until after at least 24 to 25 weeks. Every major medical organization that has examined this issue and peer-reviewed studies on the matter have consistently reached the conclusion that abortion before this point does not result in the perception of pain in a fetus. And again, that is from ACOG. Caroline, I'd love your reactions to what we heard from the representative there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think these representatives are in a really difficult spot, right? Because, you know, they all, Representative Gress included, have publicly stated again and again how opposed to abortion they are. Representative Grass, in particular, you know, has been on the record on social media, talking about, how he sees a fetus as a life. I thought it was interesting that he used the word fetus instead of baby, because I do think that, before all of this, he may have made a different choice. But I think, this is really something that is, for a lot of these people, is pitting their sort of individual values and morals and beliefs on this very emotional issue against the political reality. And I have spoken with legislators who have said, they really don't know what they're going to do, and it's going to be sort of a, in the moment decision on where they go.
All right, let's take a quick pause here. Still to come, we hear from an organizer behind the ballot initiative that would guarantee the right to an abortion is protected in Arizona's Constitution. More in just a moment.
In this country, more than 2 local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to our latest installment of If You Can Keep It with this message we got from Paula. I'm a lifelong Republican, vehemently pro-choice. I will be voting Democrat up and down the ballot and will continue to do so until all of these men restricting access are voted out of offices. They did this to women, and now they're scrambling. They can do their scrambling in the private sector. Well, let's turn now to an abortion rights organizer on the ground in Arizona. That's where last week the state Supreme Court voted to uphold an 1864 state law criminalizing almost all abortions. Chris Love is a spokesperson with Arizona for Abortion Access. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So on Tuesday, your group announced it's gathered more than 500,000 signatures supporting a ballot initiative that would enshrine abortion protections in the state constitution. Now, that's more than required to make the November ballot. What exactly would this constitutional amendment do?
So the Arizona Abortion Access Act would enshrine the fundamental right to abortion in our state constitution up to fetal viability. Thereafter, decisions about whether or not to have an abortion would remain between the pregnant patient and their medical provider. And it would take politicians completely out of the decision-making in this matter.
So how does the recent state Supreme Court ruling affect your efforts moving forward?
I will say that, we started this effort with a 15-week ban in place. And although we are devastated that our Supreme Court decided to uphold an 1864 Civil War era ban, we're moving forward with our campaign. So we are out there still collecting signatures every day. We need to turn in, more than double the required amount on the deadline, which is July 3rd. And, we anticipate making the ballot and then making our case to the Arizona voters so that they come out to support us in November.
More than double the required amount of signatures, Chris, and that goes right to what I wanted to ask you. My understanding of the ballot initiative law in Arizona is that it's very complicated. It's extremely detailed. The other side will be moving to disqualify signatures, and if you make one slip up, you could lose the whole thing. Those are layman terms, not legal terms, but give us a window into how complex this process is, aside from just collecting signatures.
Oh, absolutely. So we will need to turn in at least 384,000 valid signatures. And so that means that once we've turned everything in, they will go to the respective county recorder's offices to validate those signatures, which is just ensuring that those folks that have signed are, the people that they say they are, that they are eligible voters, that they're registered to vote. Then what they will do is send all of their tabulations back to the Secretary of State, and then he will basically determine whether or not we're certified to be on the ballot in November. And so this challenge part is really difficult because our opponents can go line by line and challenge signatures. So that's why we're trying to gather as many signatures as possible to make that line by line signature challenge a Herculean feat for them.
Caroline, opponents of this proposed ballot initiative launched a counter campaign called It Goes Too Far. They say the amendment would make abortion less safe in Arizona. What's their argument?
I've been seeing very similar efforts in all of these states where these ballot initiatives are really gaining steam. They are making false claims that, you know, this would allow, you know, abortion up until birth. Like you hear a lot of really just false statements coming from the anti-abortion side, because I think they are they're very scared of an initiative like this. I think that it's also important to say that, you know, with the way things look right now, it is likely that by the time Arizonans and also Floridians likely have the chance to vote on this issue, they will have been living under a very strict abortion ban for many months. And I think that sort of galvanizes this in a way that we just haven't really seen, even in any of the other, you know, very successful ballot measures to enshrine abortion rights.
Chris, all of the hundreds of thousands of signatures you've already collected and all of the lawyers that you're going to be hiring cost millions of dollars. I don't know how many millions. Who's funding your effort? Who's behind the funding to get abortion on the ballot in November?
Well, we've got funders from all over the country who are really interested in helping us here in Arizona. And we have our folks here in Arizona who understand that keeping abortion legal is the number one priority for November. But these campaigns are notoriously expensive. And so because of the Supreme Court's decision on Tuesday, what we've seen is folks who were kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what would happen are now off of the sidelines, and they're doing things like signing the petition, getting their friends and family to sign the petition, actually circulating petitions themselves now. And we've seen an increase in donations from just everyday Arizonans who have just had enough.
Do you also have large donations from pro-life groups or Democratic groups in the hundreds of thousands of dollars of the big boys and girls funding you too?
And I don't think you mean pro-life groups. I think you mean
pro-choice. Sorry, absolutely misspoke there. Pro-choice.
I was like, I will take the pro-life money as well.
Yeah.
But we absolutely do have our large donors. You know, we've got unions that see that this is an important issue. We have our, you know, classical suite of donors who are looking to invest if they haven't already. The organizations involved in the effort, like Planned Parenthood Action Fund and the ACLU, have also done a significant lift to help us. But we obviously need as much money as we can get so that our messaging gets out there across the state, regardless of folks' political affiliation, because we know that we need that large coalition to win in November.
Well, Chris, not everyone you ask to sign this petition says yes. So what are you hearing from people who don't support your effort?
You know, I haven't heard those things. In fact, you know, our opposition has done a decline to sign campaign where they actually stand outside where we're collecting signatures. They follow our circulators around. And what we've seen, and this is, you know, anecdotally, I've seen it myself, is that people become more interested when they see that something is going on. And ultimately, every single time, they have decided that they want to sign our petition, because Arizonans are, you know, independent, strong-willed folks, and they don't want anybody telling them what to do with their own personal healthcare decisions.
But as Todd alluded to, if successful, a legal battle is likely ahead for the Arizona ballot measure based on previous responses to statewide votes from other groups. In Michigan, a lawsuit from Right to Life of Michigan seeks to undo abortion protections added to the state constitution by voters in 2022. So how are you preparing for that possibility?
you know, we're preparing with all possibilities, right? So we've got a wonderful legal team made of local attorneys and national attorneys as well. You know, we're used to doing these sorts of things in Arizona, so we're ready to, you know, challenge any of the legal challenges that we'll all have with respect to signature collection. And, you know, we are collecting a large legal fund to, you know, deal with the impact after we win in November. So we expect to be in court for a while, but, you know, we're using our funding where we can in order to fight those challenges.
Well, and Caroline, we should mention you're in Arizona right now. What's your sense of how Arizonans are responding to this effort?
Well, I think the big question that I'm here to cover is what the legislature is going to do, because obviously we saw that sort of half-hearted effort last week to repeal, as we heard from Representative Grass earlier in the hour. But, you know, I think that there are a lot of very interesting behind-the-scenes conversations going on right now between Republicans who are realizing the political realities of the moment and are trying to weigh that against sort of their longstanding pro-life beliefs.
So, Chris, your group is continuing to collect signatures. What else is ahead?
You know, we're just chugging right along until July 3rd when we have to turn in our signatures. And so, you know, we're asking everyone, you know, to get off the fence if they were on before and join us. And that means donating, volunteering. Folks can find information about all of those things at our website, arizonaforabortionaccess.org. And then we're just planning to turn in our signatures and keeping our fingers crossed and ready to fight any legal challenges that we anticipate coming, challenging all of our signatures.
If you are unsuccessful in getting this measure on Arizona's ballot, what comes next?
Well, I don't anticipate that we will be unsuccessful because, again, we've seen that when abortion is on the ballot across the country, abortion wins. And we know that Arizonans across the political spectrum really believe in a patient's freedom to make personal health care decisions, especially about abortion, with their families and their medical providers and without politicians. You know, so we'll keep on fighting until they tell us we're finished. And then, you know, we will have to look at, weigh a possible other effort in 2026.
That's Chris Love. She's a spokesperson for Arizona for Abortion Access. Chris, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get to one more message from you. This is Melanie in Minnesota.
It feels to me that all political parties have used women's bodies and our autonomy as a talking point for far too many elections. It's exhausting to have my body be a debatable talking point, and I'm mad at both major parties, but especially Dems. It is encouraging, though, to hear the conversation shift on the Dem side, where perhaps they realize it's no longer beneficial to play political games with women's bodies. VP Harris recently visited a Planned Parenthood in Minnesota, and it was refreshing to hear her address things nearly directly. As much as I'm so over my body being a political chess piece, I think the Dems will finally codify abortion access if we give them as many progressives as possible.
Melanie, thanks for that message. Todd, I'd love to hear from you on that.
Joe Biden has started to make this pitch directly in those terms. Give us enough senators and we will codify Roe. Give us 51 senators and a majority in the House and I will codify Roe. So the White House, the Biden campaign, I should say, has started to get that message. I will say just from Arizona, one thing that's interesting, the political tactics of a ballot measure like this. There are two theories about what can happen when there's a ballot measure in November when people go into the booth. One theory is that abortion bans are super unpopular. A ballot measure with the question on the ballot will encourage people to come out, will vote, and when they're in the ballot box, advantage Democrats. Why? Because Democrats want abortion rights. There's a counter theory, though. The other theory is that while people are in the ballot box, it could create a permission structure because Joe Biden isn't popular. The permission structure might be, yeah, I want to vote to protect abortion rights so I can vote on the ballot measure, but then I don't have to vote for Joe Biden. And both of those things might be true. I think the impact on the election in the swing state of Arizona, apart from the question of abortion, is far from clear.
Mm. Well, Caroline, as we wrap up here, as I said, you're in Arizona right now. What are you watching in that state and beyond?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely watching to see what the Republicans are going to do, whether they're going to repeal this. I mean, I think, you know, it is possible that by the end of the week, this law is no longer on the books. They have the ability to do that. I'm very interested to see if these folks are going to heed Donald Trump's call to go against their own personal morals and do away with this law that many of them said that they wanted more than anything.
That's Caroline Kitchener, the national politics reporter covering abortion for The Washington Post. Caroline, thanks.
Thank you so much.
And of course, thanks to 1A's Todd Swillick for being with us for this hour of If You Can Keep It, our weekly examination of the issues and stakes of the 2024 election cycle. Today's producer was Avery Jessa Chapnick. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Your business faces specific challenges and unique opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, custom-tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the expertise, strategy, and resources of a top 10 commercial bank, a dedicated team works with you to support your success and help achieve your goals. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial.
The following message comes from NPR sponsor Sattva. Founder and CEO Ron Rudson is proud that each Sattva mattress is made to order.
Your mattress has a birth date after you order it. Nothing sits in muggy warehouses. Nothing sits in muggy basements of stores. When you order it, you're getting your product made fresh for you, and people love that.
To learn more, go to SAATVA.com/NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.